You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Fly on the Call. Today's guest is Really From, formerly known as People Like You. Last month, they released their self-titled album via Top Shelf Records, and it's one of the handful of albums that I found this year that truly stand as a work of art. Really From seamlessly blends together emo, indie, math rock, jazz, and a variety of other sounds, with just as much emphasis on the silences in between. On this episode, we discuss those eclectic sounds, the guiding principles behind what the band does, making an album that sounds huge, the unique ways they determine their track listing, investing in yourself, and a whole lot more. Before we get into that though, music writer Joel Funk and I have our second installment of What's the Buzz for You, breaking down some of our favorite tracks we've been spinning recently. Be sure to check the show notes to listen along to the playlist, and if you missed the first round, don't worry. I've created a Twas the Buzz archival playlist, so you can go back and listen to all the jams we've discussed previously. Now here is the buzz.
First song we're talking about is Numb by Water Parks, which is, this is a band that, like, no lie, I got into, I think, right when their last record came out, because I thought of them as being very, very cringy for a very long time, just because of how hyper and how annoying their presence is online, right? Like, Austin has a bad habit of, like, just typing in all caps all the time and screaming and doing, like, 50 tweets in 20 minutes and just, like, I was like, that was enough of a deterrent for me to originally put them as far away from me as possible. And then Fandom came out, and I don't know what it was, but I've been, like, hooked ever since. And Numb is the third single from their upcoming album, Greatest Hits. And I can't stop listening to the song. It's just so, like, insanely bouncy. And I don't know why I love the fast-talking chorus so much, but this band is just, like, it's, at this point, infectious how wild that energy is.
Yeah, this is the first Water Parks track I think I've ever listened to, but it's like, it's so fucking loud and so fucking huge. And I'm not saying they're the deepest lyrics, but because motherfucker, I look good today, self-care, green hair, looking cute today, kind of slays.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's like, there's no way you could hear that and not immediately be like, yeah, actually same. 100% same. And just like, I think I laughed for a solid 10 minutes when I realized that he was saying, my band and I are like Coldplay, Bethel had to say the fuck word. Like, those lyrics are so dumb, but I love it so much.
And I love that the lyrics are green hair, but on the cover he has blue and orange hair.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if the green hair was a reference to the Fandom era, because he on the first single from this album, Low Key as Hell, they like literally lift the line from the second single off of Fandom. So like the chorus of that song is also basically the chorus of another song in their catalog. But so I'm wondering if he was referencing the last era while they were writing this, which is, I think, about as meta as this band will ever get.
Yeah, and I'm just seeing that Greatest Hits is 17 tracks, so that's certainly interesting too.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they always have pretty long, like, it's, I don't think they've had less than 14 tracks on a record, so.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, they just, like, he's very prolific. I mean, granted, like you said, the lyrics for the most part are pretty surface level, so it's not like he's, like, writing scripture, but I'm just excited for the energy of this record coming out of 2020. I think I have a hard time dealing with things that are too morose.
And then next up we have Teemonade with Do and Die, which I feel like is one of the best examples of like their use of really interesting and like different melodies. I don't know, I just really love the like sloping, you know, kind of feel of the song. Yeah, it's just definitely one of my faves, and They recently signed to Counterintuitive and are saying that vinyl's coming as well as new music. I think at one point they were teasing like 4 or 5 songs. So it might be, you know, one of those like discography vinyl deals since they don't have very much out, but definitely excited for that.
Yeah, Teemonade's pretty exciting to me. Like, especially on this song, I get like big, there's like a very obvious, like a 90s energy to what they're doing musically, I think. And it feels very much to me like, the music of like when Sheryl Crow wasn't afraid to write a rock song, but then like if Sade did the vocals, like it's just so insane how well those two things like meet in the middle. And I don't know, the song is incredible and it's definitely a fun listen.
It's so funny, like I, you know, I'm a product of the 90s, but I didn't really get into music outside of country until like 2005 or whatever. So like,
beautiful. I love that for you.
All the like when For Your Strong released like their 90s cover album, I was like, oh, I kind of know this song. I don't know this one at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Music has always been huge for me, like huge for me. So like hearing these references is insane. I love hearing it.
Yeah, I pick up on, you know, when people say like this sounds like 90s music, it's like I can identify it, but I can't like identify the specifics. So it's like a really weird relationship, but I kind of dig it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then next up we have Empty Heaven with Ozzy, which is a pretty, you know, bare bones song musically, but he does such an amazing job at storytelling and really kind of like getting you to picture, you know, this person who was like an inspiration for a lot of his music and stuff. And I don't know, I really love it. And I think that, you know, I tweeted this out when I first found Empty Heaven. Like if you make a playlist of all his music in chronological order, it's so good. It's so cool to see like the progression and the different sides. And, you know, he's in the middle of, you know, doing a collaborative track each week this month. And I'm really excited for that. And I know there's more to come that I'm also very excited for.
Yeah. This song, you know, it reminded me like on first listen, a lot of, I don't know how into La Dispute you ever got, but they have a series of like 2 or 3 song EPs called the Hear Hear series. And just how stripped back this is with that like very, just the soft spoken delivery reminded me of La Dispute, like the La Dispute that I loved when I was in like my freshman year of college. And it's just, it's refreshing to hear that done, but done in a way that's so like, it doesn't feel recycled. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
It is. It's good to hear. I'm excited to hear more from this guy for sure. And then I think that brings us into the next song, which is Clarkson by Sly Withers. Sly Withers is a band that I got into 2018, 2019, maybe, when I had this like very huge obsession with Australian like pop punk and emo. Like it, I don't even remember how it started, but if it wasn't music from Australia for at least the first half of 2019, I was not listening to it. Clarkson is, I think, the 4th single to be released off of their upcoming record, Gardens. But I think this is, out of the 4 that have been released, the one that really encompasses what Sly Withers does best. The storytelling is there vocally. It's probably one of their most solid performances. And it drives home what they describe themselves as, which is feelsy punk from Perth. And it's just like this beautiful blend of bands like The Hotelier and Modern Baseball, that just they find a way to write about things that we all feel that are familiar enough for everybody without feeling like the same sad sack of shit that you hear recycled pretty often.
I was definitely around for that Australian phase for you, which is why, you know, Bugs is one of the first guests for this show. And I've had a few other Australian bands on, actually, I think, and their music industry down there is like so interesting to me. You know, it seems like bands in like the pop punk realm really have the opportunity to kind of pop off, which is really exciting to see, because I feel like we don't really see that much in the States anymore. And yeah, I feel like Sly Withers is just like a really great example of that kind of like, you know, early 2000s pop punk mixed with the indie leaning emo. And the build on this song in particular is like really awesome to me.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are incredible. I can't wait for the rest of this record to come out. And just, I don't know, I don't want to sound like that guy, but I really think this band could like take over the world 100%. And then That brings us into I Eat Boys by Chloe Moriondo, which I mentioned her last week, but she is probably the act I'm most excited for in 2021. I Eat Boys is the first single where she announced the album Blood Bunny, which is coming out next month. And what I love about this is it really showcases the morbid sense of humor that I think a lot of younger, Gen Z in particular, has, in a way that's not crude. She's obviously singing about eating boys or literally murdering them for looking at her funny in the street, but in a way that, I don't know, it's not weird. It feels almost like if Diablo Cody was writing music, right? This song gives me big Jennifer's Body energy. And I just think that the way she writes is so smart, and it's nice to have these huge hooks with just a sense of humor about them. When I heard it originally, I was like, this could be a Phoebe Bridgers song if it was a little bit slower, just because they have that same morbid sense of humor that I think gets lost on a lot of Phoebe's tracks because of how somber they are.
Yeah, I really love the dissonance there. It has this awesome chill summery vibe, but then, you know, if you look up, obviously from the title or the title of the album, and even the album artwork, it's you know, such a difference in the sound, and the production on here is so great. It's, there's clear room for everything. Again, about the album artwork, it reminds me of last week we were talking about Pink Shift when they were teasing what now became their EP release.
Yep.
Which I got that. I was right on that pink vinyl that sold out the same day. And I just love the artwork, and I love artists that, you know, are paying attention to that stuff, to those details, especially in an age where it's you know, the album artwork on Spotify isn't necessarily as important as, you know, whether you're seeing a full CD or a vinyl.
Right. I mean, look at The Life of Pablo, if you ever want proof that album art on streaming services does not matter. But I enjoy when they do pay attention to things like that. And what I think I love most about what we've heard so far from this record is that it's so different from her debut, Rabbit Hearted. Rabbit Hearted, she was 16 when that album came out, and she was just the growth in these 2 years from then to now is incredible. And just to hear how much more, I think she was writing more for herself this time around, and you can hear that because it's there are times where it's darkly funny, and the other singles Girl on TV or Manta Rays, it's not afraid to explore being young, being queer, being in love, and not having to kind of hide it with dance around it with metaphors. I'm loving the direction she's going.
And doing it all on a major label is even cooler.
Absolutely. It's insane.
And it's also really cool that she clearly has ties to, you know, our scene.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I don't know. It's just very exciting to hear. Not to sound a super jaded millennial, but it's nice to hear Gen Z, young kids, not afraid to not just make, hyperpop. No offense to hyperpop, but it's nice to hear something other than that coming out of it.
Yeah, I've said it many times on this podcast before, and I'll say it again. I love the breakdown of genre that we've seen over the last few years.
100%.
It's such a breath of fresh air that you don't know what could potentially be coming anytime.
Yeah. I mean, look at Poppy, for God's sake. To go from 2000s pop to this death metal album she put out is insane.
And I guess speaking of that, which also fits into it pretty well, is the last track that we have, which is Quirk by Really From, who's actually going to be the guest for this week. And this, the whole album, their self-titled album, is the second track on the album. And I was certainly fully into the album by the time this track was over, if not sooner. I really love the kind of math rock open air feeling. And again, similar to the Chloe track, it has this room to breathe. You can feel the space. And that's something that I really appreciate. And, you know, they really have done a great job of blending the emo, the math rock, the jazz, and kind of anything else that you might want into this really cool, somber piece that really fits. The album fits as a singular piece of art, which is really awesome.
Yeah, this band is insane to me. I remember when Verse was released back in 2017, I remember writing about that for 36 Vultures and just absolutely being in love with, like you said, the way they were able to marry all the different genres that they bring to the table and do it in a way that doesn't feel forced. You know what I mean? So like, there's no obvious, okay, well, we all like jazz, so we're really going to shoehorn this weird jazz part into this song. It's like, obviously it's not effortless, but it feels effortless. Like it's just, it feels organic. And I love everything this band brings to the table. This album was incredible. And Sanders' side project, Haunter, is a really cool example of just how wildly talented every different member of this band is.
And then just a couple quick pieces of music news that have caught my eye recently. Today, Lucy Dacus announced an album with opening support from Bartiz Strange on her tour, which is amazing. And I really hope that tours happen the way we're kind of all hopeful that they do.
Yep.
And then the other thing that I have is Downhall announced their sophomore album Proof, which is going to be out the end of May, I believe. And that was one of my immediate pre-orders, hopped on right away. Like, this band is crazy. The build from their three EPs to their first album, Before You Fell Asleep, like, I knew Before You Fell Asleep was going to be like the culmination of that, but I didn't know where they were going to go from there. And Proof is not what I expected, but it blows Before You Fall Asleep out of the water in like every single way, just about.
Beautiful. I'll be honest, Standing Water is the first Downhall song I think I've actually listened to all the way through. But I am very excited to go to dive into their back catalog because I loved what I heard this time around.
That was The Buzz, and coming up next is my conversation with Really From. I'm curious, with like such a diverse sound that Really From has, what is kind of like your guiding principle when you go to create music?
I think it's an agreement of just like everyone's bringing something to the table, every idea is heard, and if we like to run with idea, we engage with it, and if we're unsure about it, I feel like we are at a point where we respect each other enough where we'd be like, oh, I'm not sure about this, or maybe this. And it's a lot of collaboration like that, at least for writing the record. But yeah, that's how I see it. It's always just like an understanding of respect and willingness to try things. And everyone's idea has a space. And I don't think, even if someone says, I have an idea, no one's like, oh, we're not going to listen to that, or doesn't take it seriously. I feel like at a point where we're all willing to try ideas and hear things. And if it doesn't work, we're like, oh, maybe I'm not sure about this, or I'm not sure about this, or maybe let's move to this. But I feel like that conversation is always present during writing.
I would also add that, like, you know, we all have like we each individually have very eclectic tastes in music. So I think we're also can be very opinionated. So we like to like kind of, when we're having conversations, and like, sometimes we can be quick to like judge something and be like, oh, that sounds like that kind of thing. Should we do that kind of thing? Do we want to do that kind of thing? I think we've gotten to a point in our own abilities where we can play around with a lot of different ideas, because our abilities don't kind of constrict us to one thing. It's like, well, gosh, we can almost do anything here and there, depending on what we're doing. So I think when the four of us come together with our own opinions and stuff, you get very interesting results.
Usually we, like, concerning like specific parts, we all kind of like, if someone brings in a song, they'll leave room for the other person, or leave space, like Chris said, for the other person to kind of write their own part. Someone might come up with an idea of a part for somebody else for them to then develop as their own. And that's kind of just a very like basic, like fundamental thing we do in our process, I feel like.
Yeah, I would also say that one of our guiding principles is that we have never, as long as I've been in the band, we, you know, when we're starting to create, I had asked Chris like pretty early on in our writing process, like, you know, what do we want to sound like, and who do we want to sound like, and things like that. And that all of that kind of went off the table from a really early start. And Chris would always say, like, well, actually, let's not start there. Like, let's not start with a target in mind, and let's just see what we come up with. And of course, all of our influences play into our sound, but it's really awesome to kind of start with a blank slate and just kind of like vibe off of each other's ideas and hear what each other are playing and saying, and let that be our influence.
Yeah, and where's that like process of discovery kind of stop for you? Like, how much of it bleeds into the studio versus preparation beforehand?
I think it mainly when we have to record. Well, we've talked about this a lot, but a lot of us have were like writing parts up until we had to do our takes in the studio. So you're always like editing, re-editing, trying to refine things, trying to approach things differently. I was also going to say, I feel like all of us interact with music differently too. Like, we're all listeners and we all like music, but how we interact with music is very different. Like, I know Sander is, you know, like a huge audiophile, like really likes listening to different parts and listen to like sounds and textures and always looks for that in a song. And similar with Matt too, he kind of finds like the compositional side and just the format of the sounds itself. But I feel like I'm always looking into like the story of the song and the context of it and the emotionality behind it. I feel like Michi's very similar of it too, and just likes to just to understand like the story of the music and how we like interact with music outside of just like the indie scene as well. Like, I still try to study as much like classical guitar, flamenco guitar, and like jazz music as I can, and so is everyone else. I know Michi does a lot of work with people with dementia and interacts with music with them, and always learns a lot of older songs from their generation. So I feel like that experience of our interactions plays and blends a lot into our songwriting as well, and why it may seem so naturally eclectic and not forced, because we're always interacting with just a whole variety of sounds.
Yeah, and I mean, I saw that you kind of didn't really go into the, you know, writing or recording process with kind of like preconceived notions of the track listing. I'm curious how you kind of like approached that when sequencing did finally come into the picture, and what, you know, how you kind of used the different sounds to guide the listener through the album.
It was a long, long conversation that we had. It was a long time. I don't think we've talked about this, but I will say that how we came about the track list, first, we did not decide what the order of the songs were until we mixed the album. So not even after we tracked everything. And how we approached it, our method was each person, including Sai, who was the producer on the album, wrote their own track lists, their own individual track list of what the album is. And then after that, we listened to each person's, and then we came together and just made a summary of three different versions of those five different versions. And from those three, we voted on one. So there's actually eight different versions of this album that exists. And the one that exists right now is only one of the eight different possibilities. So there are alternate timelines where other versions of this album exist, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah, that's so funny to think about.
Yeah, I want the 8 LP box set with every single version.
That would be so funny if we ever had enough money to do that.
I feel like the album has like such a unique sound to it. Like, it's kind of the stereotypical like late night back of the bar like vibe to it. And I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about kind of what the studio environment was like for you and what kind of sound you were hoping to capture with the album.
It was a great recording environment. I don't know, really comfortable. I don't know if you've heard this place, Machines with Magnets, but it's also part of it is like a venue, I guess, kind of DIY cool venue and bar. So there's a lot of like open space. So, you know, if we needed like space away from each other, you could find that pretty easily. I wasn't one of the people that stayed there, but I know the rest of the band stayed there overnight. So in general, yeah, it was just really, it was really comfortable.
Yeah, it was cool to like wake up and then just walk across the hall and go into the studio and record. That was very nice and very convenient. We also went to the studio the weekend before lockdown. like when we were in the studio was when South by got canceled. And then it was at that point where we're all like, oh, this is getting real, real. Like, it's getting very serious. And so when we were in the studio, we're all in an enclosed space next to each other, not wearing any masks. And the next time we're in the studio, we're all masked up, keeping social distance. So that was very interesting to look back on, to seeing how the different dynamics were just because of COVID and the situation. But it was really nice to have, again, it was really nice having Sai there too, who was able to ground us, I feel like, to a certain extent, to help us like push us forward. Seth was also very like willing to share his opinion, the engineer at Machines with Magnets, willing to share his opinion, but also willing to like just help us make the thing and help us produce like the best record that we could. Mm-hmm. And Michi could also speak to this, but a lot of the vocals, no vocals were recorded at that studio too. We recorded all the vocals in Michi's closet, actually. That was all like padded up. That was super cool. So that's what I think, that's the most astounding thing about this album, is how good the vocals sound in a tiny closet, right? Probably like 15 feet from where Michi's sitting right now.
Oh yeah. Yeah, all the vocals were done in my apartment. Sai did an incredible job on those, and yeah, we recorded the majority of everything at Machines with Magnets in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Our engineer's name is Seth Manchester. And like Chris said, he did a phenomenal job at kind of guiding the process and providing a lot of input based on his experience. And the studio is just like beautiful and comfortable to be in. I only recorded live piano there. So one of the nice things about playing a keyboard and a synth is that we did all of the keyboard stuff remotely through MIDI, and then we're able to choose our synth sounds after. So we had a lot of flexibility there as far as our timeline was concerned, although Sai spent many hours programming the synth sounds and and choosing. Yeah, that was a very tedious process for him, and he just absolutely killed it.
And were there any songs that ended up kind of like sounding drastically different by the time the keyboards were fully programmed?
Yeah, I would say I'm From Here, that like rock section in the middle. The majority of the synth sounds weren't decided until during tracking. So there were a lot of the parts that we just had no idea what was going to sound. I feel like I'm From Here, In the Spaces, and I feel like the synth bass on Trilingual too, those were just like so heavy and so 80s sounding. That was so cool. So I feel like those, for me personally, those three songs, when I heard it like played back and when Sai sent us the tracks with the synth, I was like, whoa, this sounds like completely different than what I had imagined, for the better.
Yeah. Everything was written just on like a tiny compact piano, basically, with like this vague Rhodes sound. And then when we were hearing some of these bounces from Sai, it was like, okay, now we have a Jupiter, now we have a Whirly, now we have, you know, so many different things and layers of different synth sounds as well. So it definitely shaped the feel of the songs a lot.
Yeah, and I read also about kind of like while you were in the studio being urged to kind of make the sound of the album as big as you wanted to and not really worry about how it would translate live. And I'm curious now, kind of like looking back, and now that you're, you know, probably thinking a little bit more about how it will translate live, what kind of are the roadblocks that you're finding, or like the things that you think are going to be really interesting to be able to play around with?
Shot ourselves in the foot with that one.
No.
That was a good joke.
I think that it was a huge blessing, and honestly, an awesome way to be encouraged to expand our sound, because you know, with what we have available to us in music today, like the possibilities really are endless, and I think that it was a huge blessing to not think about what our live setup was going to be, but just, make the sound exactly that as big as we want it to be. I made a huge purchase today and bought a new synthesizer, which nobody knows about yet. So surprise. I'm so excited, but it's going to be huge for me in what I'm going to be able to do. And it's also a synthesizer that I feel that I'm going to be able to grow into over like my lifetime, probably. So I'm really excited about that.
Nice, nice. Another thing that I find, you know, I love that this is the self-titled album. And I love like that kind of ties into how much it digs into kind of like identity and like looking at yourself internally. And I would like to hear a little bit more about kind of like the themes that come up upon identity, like throughout the album, and kind of like the thoughts behind them.
It was related to the name change. We were in a position where we had to change our name. And I've always had the phrase "really from" in my head. I've always had that like question posed to me growing up, as like most mixed people do, as most Asian people do. You know, just having someone like with a face like mine and an accent like mine, and a lot of like people in this country have never seen those two things together. So that was something that's always been like present in my life. And I know with this band, I've always talked a little bit about it, and we've always like talked about ideas of self and identity and place. And I thought that "Really From" and "People Like You," which was our previous name, aligned thematically, and there was a continuity between the two. So once we made the change to switch our name to that, I feel like that could kind of influence at least my songwriting for our next album. And I was like, let's just go straight into it. And a lot of these songs that are on this album, the songs I've been trying to write for years, since I've been like writing music, I've been just trying to understand it and do it in like a artful way, in a way that has craft and scope and depth and doesn't sound trite or repetitive or just bad. And, you know, so I feel like that has always, the subject themes are just things that I've always written about for my whole life. And the changing our name to "Really From" allowed us to really dive first into that and just really craft a sound that best supports that and makes it seem the highest form that we could present it in.
And could you talk a little bit more about that kind of process of getting to the point where you are able to, you know, write these songs and express the thoughts in them, and kind of like what it was that changed and made that click for you?
I feel like beyond the lyrics, I feel like more musically, how I approached writing the lyrics was kind of similar how we all write our parts, that we're like, all right, we have this idea in mind and let me execute it this way. And then you execute it and then you refine it. You're like, this is not enough. I could do this better. So I feel like honestly how I kind of approached writing the lyrics was very like a technical way, kind of similar to how Sander wrote his drum parts, of just being like thinking very hard about how to present this in a way that hasn't been presented before, but also in a simplistic way that could fit structure. I feel like everyone else could talk more about their individual contributions to the album. But I feel like it's just, again, just trying to refine, produce, and be better than what was before. I feel like that's always our goal as artists.
I would also add, as far as themes are concerned, being in this band has shaped my ability to share a lot of those thoughts freely. Of course, as mixed race people, we have had, you know, these are our lived experiences and these are things that we have dealt with and thought about our entire lives. But I would say that, you know, at one point I was a part of the scene, but surrounded by like my white friends from New Hampshire and like white dudes in the emo scene. And I think getting to Berkeley and surrounding myself with a more diverse crowd and feeling empowered by people who look like me and have similar stories empowered me to share my perspective as well.
We were talking earlier about kind of like the scope of the sounds in your music, and kind of one of the the outliers, in my opinion, is kind of like in spaces, which is kind of, you know, has like that kind of like cinematic robotic like vocals. And is just a little bit, like I said, a little bit like out of more unexpected from the album. And I'd love to hear more about kind of like that song and how that one came together.
Yeah, I'd be happy to speak on that. That's something that I brought to the band, right? I at least started. And the first minute or so was something I had written out basically for the band to play. And then everything that pretty much followed that we developed as a group. And, you know, the meaning behind the lyrics that Chris wrote, and I think the song in general, I think it sort of took meaning after it was fully written. But initially, my point of writing that music and bringing it to the band was to have something that was a little bit of a departure from what we've written in the past and the music we've written in the past, because there is a lot of just, you know, literal silence, and it starts off very calm and slowly develops over the course of the 5 minutes. I think that's something that, yeah, we haven't really explored as much. Also, just like as far as like the orchestration of the song, it just starts with synth bass, which I think is a statement in itself, because that's sort of a new thing with this band, like having synth bass as opposed to like electric bass, and then synth bass and trumpet, and then guitar comes in a little later. So it's just like the order of the instrumentation and everything is a little bit different. So yeah, it was really for the point of being exploring new territory.
I will also add to that, I feel like Matt's thesis behind the album really did influence the lyrics as well, because his whole thesis is just like being in silence. Really, there is a lot of space and a lot of like room to breathe. And what do you do when you're in that silence? So when I like, he presented that song, there was this, like, he mapped out all the rests on the album. All like every single beat of silence was meticulously planned out by Matt. So when I was like in those spaces, sorry, when I was in like listening to those, like those silence parts and just really just like sitting with it, that's kind of like let my mind wander. And just, I feel like those moments of quiet and stillness are, it just makes me think about other things. So that like whole thesis of the out, like the lyrics are about like a story I heard about my Chinese grandmother who I never met, and how she like worked a lot and like moved to a country she's never been to. I have no relationship with this woman. I've never met her, but just thinking about just like the monotony of working so hard and just trying to find a moment to yourself, especially like a working immigrant in New York City, it's not very common. So I just felt like those spaces that Matt created allowed me to meditate on something that people can't really meditate on because they don't have those moments of silence. So that's, I think that, I don't think we ever talked about it, but I'm just like realizing that now. I think that's definitely influenced how I approached Ryan, those lyrics. And then obviously like Matt, you did write the end part too, like that piano part. I remember when you first showed it, I was like, yo, that's gotta be the jam. We gotta like rock on that.
Became a pretty heavy like post-rock.
Post-up. All the rock stuff was written by you, man. You're the one that wrote the Hendrix chord, wrote the stoner rock part.
The blast beat at the end is all Sander. Right? You call it a blast beat? I don't know.
I was going for a black gaze type of...
My mom's favorite song on the album. It's the song that Matt wrote.
Hey, we all wrote it.
And then, I mean, another thing about the band that's like really interesting to me is like, you're kind of not quite like an instrumental band, but you are, you know, a little bit more sparse with the lyricism and kind of heavy on the very emotional instrumentation. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about kind of like how you came into that style and what it is about it that you connect with.
Yeah, I feel like everyone could talk about this to a huge extent, but I feel like when Sander and I kind of like started this band after I Kill Giants, we kind of wanted to make it more instrumental and go a little deeper and a little more complex. And then like when we made the first record, we asked Matt and Michi to play on it and sing on it. And then eventually when we started playing shows, we all realized that we all liked playing music together and writing music together and kind of just went with that. So I feel like our intention is we always want to try write things to the best of our ability and play to the best of our ability. And I feel like there's no deliberate choice to be like, all right, this song's going to have X amount of lyrics or this part is going to have this. I just feel like it's more so you're building it up on the spot that it's not driven by the lyrics. I mean, the only song that I think that's on that is The House on this album. But that's, other than that, everything was like kind of fitting in spaces of the music. But I feel like everyone just also has such a huge voice. Like Matt and Sander are such lyrical musicians and they play very melodically. I mean, obviously, because Matt is playing a trumpet, but Sander as well. He just doesn't like to keep a steady beat. He's like really trying to sing in his parts. So I feel like everyone's lyricism needs to stand out somehow. I feel like it's just providing space for each other's lyricism in their own, in either instrumental writing or lyrical writing to take place in the song.
I know you all have kind of like backgrounds in like the jazz area as well as the kind of emo indie DIY area. I'd love to hear a little bit more about kind of like where your musical roots lie.
Yeah, obviously, you know, going to Berkeley, we were surrounded by a lot of different things in my own pursuits to become a better drummer. I've studied jazz. With this record specifically, I took on quite a lot of jazz study, more than I kind of at the beginning of the game recognized that I wasn't at the top of my ability to make these songs what they could be. So I sort of started a long game very early on to then be prepared to offer a more diverse and more more authentic approach to, you know, I've always looked at, I think we like to look up to Matt because he's such an amazing musician, and he you know, yeah, and being a he was a jazz comp major, so we're, and you know, was always playing with like really good players, so it's such an honor to play with him, and I'm always trying to, you know, it, besides him, everyone is always kind of pushing me to try and match that. But, you know, coming from where me and Chris were coming from, we were doing a lot of math rock stuff. I think that whole sound has gotten really old and stale. I think we were already, when we got into that game, it was already kind of on its way out in a certain way, or, you know, a lot of heavy players had already kind of made quite a statement. So I've always tried to bring in something different in any capacity. But I'd say, at least on my end, I've really dug into a lot of more like fusion, a lot of the newer in the last five, six years, a lot of the newer like you know, jazz and hip hop fusion type of stuff that's come about. That's really gotten under my belt finally to a certain degree. So that's kind of what I was trying to really put into this record. Cause I prefer not to, if I don't have to play a punk beat or an emo beat or whatever you call that, I don't want to play it. And I'm glad that like we had a, you know, we have a lot of indie rock parts, and I'm always, if we're playing rock, I'm going to play a big rock part so it can sound big, you know. I'm always trying to serve the music, so that definitely, it was, how do I do something authentic and interesting and new, but how do I make these songs bop as much as possible? It's a very fine line to walk, and I think everyone in this band does it in their own very unique way.
Yeah, and I think going off the idea of making a song bop, I think one of the kind of best examples of that on the record is Trilingual, which has kind of, you know, some of the brighter song sounds on the album, and, you know, the lyrics hitting on kind of like reconnecting with culture through your family's native languages. And I would love to hear a little bit more about how that song came together.
You know, that song's gone through like probably the most transformation from its conception. Like Sander could talk about this too, but he basically went, I forget, we can't decide when this happened. There's like a debate between the two of us on when this moment happened, but there was a moment where he asked me to like just play some like chords and just to he wants to sample my guitar. So I just like playing chords that I was into at the time and not really in time or anything, just like late and stuffering out. And then he kind of chopped it up. He did chop it up and create his own form with it and create his own song with that. And basically that out of that whole creation came that riff in the chorus, essentially. That was like the heart of the song. And then there was like a separate writing session with me and Michi, just like working on, we were like, oh, let's just like meet together and just write something. And she was just like playing this like melody on the piano at my house. And we were like, this is a nice melody. And I kind of took some lyrics that I had from, that melody from another song, but added to that. And then I was like, oh, what if we just like put this all together? And that was like the format of it, but the actual sounds of the form of like starting really soft and that post-rock like folk intro to that rock punk second half didn't really come about till the very end, till Sai was like, we played the song for him. He's like, something's not working here. So he's like, can you guys just sing me the lyrics? And then like me and Michi just like played it together, and I played more open, and he was like, this is the song. And we just like, he has a huge credit to him to how that song came about, because he was the one that kind of mapped. I was like, all right, you should try to do this here and then kind of go big here. And I feel like a lot of our parts were in written to like the studio. Like I know Matt improvised a bunch on that too. And I don't know if you wrote the charts for the horn parts until after the studio, or did you write beforehand?
For Trilingual. Trombone parts came after, but
right.
A good amount. All the trumpet parts were planned out beforehand. That was funny because I wrote a lot of the trumpet parts to sort of follow Michi's vocals, but we recorded the trumpet before the vocals. So I think it works. There's some moments where it's, I don't know, obvious to me that the trumpet was recorded before the vocals, but the trombone was recorded after, and I didn't like come. I had like a loose idea of what they would, how would that would work in the beginning, but.
And we mentioned before kind of like the connective tissue between people like you and Really From. And on the album, there's kind of like that similar pairing with I Live Here Now and I'm From Here, kind of connected by that interlude. Can you talk a little bit about kind of those two songs and how they relate to each other?
So I could say I Live Here Now is the second oldest song on that album, next to the house. That that main riff came about after the 2016 election. I went over to Sanders' house because we were both living in Jersey at the time, and I just wanted to play and just let the frustration out. So we kind of just like, I had that riff and we kind of like put it together. And that song has also gone through many, many iterations. So I think it kind of worked out that the titles were related, but that was never the original plan of having I Live Here Now and then Last Knee Play and then I'm From Here. But somehow, by the grace of God, it worked. And I feel like I'm From Here was always kind of just the thesis statement of the album. It's always addressing the question that is our band name. But I Live Here Now was always like kind of a statement to a reaction of, you know, the election at the time and just the state of the country and the world in general. And I actually borrowed the name of that song from an episode of the show The Leftovers. Like there was the season two finale Leftovers called I Live Here Now, and it was like one of my favorite episodes of television, just like really cool and really weird. And I just like the idea of like being present in a place that you're not really sure about, and like this is the world that we live in now. And it's really funny, we like released the album after the Trump presidency, but it feels like that it was always a statement like, this is where we are now and this is what we have to deal with, while I'm From Here was always like, this is where I've been and this is where I always was. But I guess it was never a conscious choice to be like, all right, these are the connecting tissues that are connected by the knee play. It just ended up working that way, which is pretty cool.
And then another thing I kind of wanted to hit on is the use of kind of like minor keys and dissonance in your music, which is something that kind of, to me, makes it stand out compared to a lot of other bands. And yeah, could you just talk a little bit kind of about that, like the theory and the feel behind it?
I'm trying to think. I guess is apartment song? No, apartment song is technically Lydian. And
yeah, no, and I'm guilty of like always writing things in major keys.
Same. I guess Michi was the one that always wrote in minor keys. Yeah, I don't think you wrote anything in a minor key in this album, did you?
That's a great question.
I guess I Live Here Now is tech.
Trilingual sounds super dark in the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a major key technically. Cause it's just like a lot of like different random like mobile interchange chords. Yeah, I just
use a lot of tension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think it's just like the jazz training in us, and I like how I like write chord progressions kind of similar to like how everyone writes. It's like to do things unpredictable and like to voice things unpredictably. Like I remember when we're working on Yellow Fever and Michi's like, I kind of want like power chords on this thing, like kind of a chuggy thing. And I was like, bet I'm gonna do that, but not that. And I want to like, you can make things heavy and approach things differently without doing like a traditional, you know, a quote unquote power chord, or traditional doing like a minor key or something. Oh, I guess Quirk, the bridge of Quirk is minor key. That's it. There we go. Sorry. I guess I don't really think of that of a tonality center, because it's how we've like interacted and learned about harmonies. There is real no center technically, that things are so related with each other that you could really go anywhere you want. And there are keys that shouldn't sound, or chords that shouldn't sound good next to each other that do sound good next to each other because of a theoretical concept. So I think that's how we kind of approach it, is that we're like, yes, there is a tonal center, but you're not confined by the rules of these tonal centers, and how we kind of try and move in and out and try and just like play with wherever the center is. And maybe that's why it sounds ambiguous, is because we're not trying to ground ourselves in one key.
And then I always like to wrap up by asking the same question, which is just asking for a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about lately, whether it's music or life or whatever else that you would like to share.
Oh, okay. We just did a nose goes, because you guys obviously can't see us, but all right. Well, one thing that I have been thinking about lately, actually in literally this week, and in like making this huge purchase of this synthesizer that I'm going to have for the rest of my life. My partner and I are like splitting this synthesizer because we both want this in our lives. And I was like totally convinced, and I was like, yeah, this is the one. But as I was like processing it, I was like, man, this is like a huge purchase. And there was like so many feelings that I was feeling, like, oh, like you're not a good enough musician to like own this kind of equipment. Or, you know, wow, like this is so much money, like, you know, you should be putting it somewhere else, or you should be putting it towards your student loans, or like whatever. And I've been really like meditating on that a lot, because I am a musician and I am going, like, this is an investment for me, but it's, anyway, I could do an entire podcast just on this. So I'll try to keep it brief, but I guess, you know, a lot of this comes from like my upbringing of like not having a lot of money, like of always having the store brand cereal, of always having secondhand clothes, and having, you know, an immigrant mother who was like trying to survive and trying to get by. And while there's so much that I admire in that and so much humility, a lot of that mentality like hindered me from like thriving, or like from trying, you know, I was always trying to be good at things. But there have been a lot of times in my life where I didn't think that I could be the best, or that I could be like an entrepreneur, or like have that kind of mentality, because it was like, okay, like as long as you're doing okay, that's like enough. And so I'm finally like at a point in my life where I feel, you know, I have to battle my own brain to say like, you deserve this. So if I could give a piece of advice to anybody else who comes from a similar you know, background or financial situation or whatever it may be, is that like you are worth your passions and you are worth the investment in your happiness and in your success.
That was beautiful.
Thanks, Chris.
Always gassing each other up and really from.
Hey.
I get there's too many things I would say, but just that I think this whole record is really just a triumph of hard work. And it's funny, like In the Spaces is like about like kind of keeping your head down and just like working, and like and there's own, you know, I've a lot of these songs have personally, not being the one to write the lyrics, but still being a person of mixed race and taking in this record as it's been finished, but you know, being a non-harmonic instrumental contributor, it's been very fascinating to me in the way I've started, you know, I've connected to these songs in different ways. Now after the fact that it's done, I think these songs can mean different things to many different people. And I think it's like, it's maybe lame to say, like, you only live once, but it's just, you know, I felt so exhausted at the end of this record, emotionally. I had, you know, a decent amount of crazy things happened to me in the last 4 years since we embarked on this record. So now reflecting back, it's heavy. And I at times feel like I'm like, can I do this again? I don't know what, you know, at what cost can I put all myself into another record like this? I don't know if I can, but I don't regret it. It feels like it's something that I think if you're going to do something, if you're going to make art, you have to put everything into it on so many levels. Otherwise, why the fuck are you doing it? So my piece of advice would be to go all in.
It was also beautiful, Sander. Serious, that was awesome.
It's my turn. Oh, do I have advice to give? Jeez. I mean, I also agree with things that have been said so far. Definitely invest in yourself. You know, you are worth it. And that's important. It's important to be like confident and to be confident in your creations, in your creativity. But also collaboration is really fucking difficult, especially this particular situation when you have 4/5 very, I mean, I'm not intelligent, but everyone else is very intelligent, intelligent, creative people in one room trying to write something together. It is like, it's like impossible. So the fact that we even did that is, you know, amazing in itself, but it's hard. And a lot of times the way the bands work, it's like one person like writes everything and everyone else just kind of like follows along and that works. And then band members leave and it's really only one stable person, or it's fully collaborative and then the band breaks up like a year later. I don't know. It's just really, really difficult. But I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, be confident in yourself and invest in yourself, but also like try and leave your ego at the door, you know. I don't know. That's something I feel like I'm still trying to learn, you know, as speaking personally, as someone that when I write music, it's usually for myself or for people that are just, you know, there to play my music, and it's like a one-off thing or a recording or whatever. It's not necessarily like a band, but like when you're writing for a band and there's other people like involved, you have to take into account what they want and their needs, not just your own. So yeah, I don't know. Leave your ego at the door. That's the expression, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I would say Sandra gave it applause to Matt and Snap. No, I would say to tie it all into knowing your worth, giving it your all, leaving your ego at the door. I would say the last thing I would leave you with is that you may never find the answer to what you're looking for, whether it is making music or just finding meaning in yourself. I think the purpose of everything is not to find the meaning, but is the process of looking and the collective of in which you look it for, and for which you search it. So, for example, Michi was saying just knowing your worth and what you are worth something, that is very important, because you cannot acknowledge others until you acknowledge yourself. You cannot give worth to someone else if you cannot validate your own meaning as a person and what you feel like you deserve. Giving your all has to involve understanding how much you can give and for your own sake, and who you're giving it all to. And like Matt said, leaving your ego at the door, understanding that when you're creating something with other people, it's not about you, it's not about them, it's about the something, it's about the creation. So I would say, whatever you do, do it with people you love, do it with people that helps you sustain, helps you create, and helps you thrive. And you know, I've been reading a lot of different like abolitionist literature of the idea of freedom dreaming and the idea of hope as a practice, and how the practice is an ongoing experience, and you may never achieve a certain goal, but the purpose of dreaming and hoping is to look towards a horizon and hoping for something better than what we already have. And the only way you can get there to that horizon is with people that you trust, that you respect, that you care about. And I feel like this band encompasses all of those things, that we do this with each other and we're able to achieve such a feat because we love each other, no matter how much more we get upset at each other sometimes, or get into fights or frustrated with each other. That is the underlying basis and foundation of this band. So whatever you decide to do, make sure you do it with people you love.
Awesome. Love that. That's probably the most poetic advice we've gotten, but
yeah, go off, poet.
Is there anything that we haven't hit on about the album that you've been really itching to get out?
I do want to say one last thing about track listing. It's really funny you brought that up, because when I was in high school, I downloaded Regina Spektor's Soviet Quiche off like Mediafire for free. I like download it illegally. And the version that I got is not the original track listing. And I didn't find that out until 5 or 7 years later, until I think I met Michi, and Michi's like, oh yeah, I love this album. And we listened to it. I was like, wait, why is it not starting with this song? And why is it going here? So already my perception of what something is because totally shattered. And like my favorite version of that album doesn't actually exist. So I think it's really interesting that, like, you know, obviously we had a specific order and kind of flows nicely, but I always encourage people to say, like, hey, if you have your own order of songs, you could create your own album just with your own different playlists. So I encourage people to do that too. I think that's a lot of fun. And it's a trip when you realize your truth is a lie the whole time.
And there we go. Episode 80 of Fly on the Call is in the bag. Seriously, 2021 is going to be a super hard year for putting together a year-end list, and we're only in April. Really From, without a doubt, will be somewhere on mine, and I truly hope you go check out their self-titled album. It's best played at midnight through headphones, but you'll enjoy it no matter when or how you listen. Fly on the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. A special thank you to Joel Funk for coming on for What's the Buzz, and as always, to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyInTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at FlyInTheCallPod@gmail.com. Invest in yourself. You're worth it.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.